This is a recording for part B of session 3 of CCT 692 on organizing and processing research materials. In preparation for this session, you are supposed to make a copy of the research organization worksheet. So during this audio recording and during the threaded discussion, you should use that sheet to write down ideas that people suggest, not just me, that your other classmates suggest, that you're interested in, that you might take up. And at the end of all that, you should mark a small set of them that you plan to do some work on. If you have a big, long list of things that you say, oh, I need to do this, I need to do that, you'll probably end up doing none of them. If you have a list of, say, 5 at the most, then that's doable and you can follow them up. And then when you've got them under your belt, you can add more. Anyway, the first part of it, the first and probably most important part of this area is taking notes. Not just taking notes so that you transcribe what's in a book or a journal into your notebook or your workbook, but having a dialogue with the author so that the questions you've started with interact with what the author's saying or not saying, and then generates more questions for you and exposes things you're thinking about that you hadn't thought about before. To illustrate that, I want you to look at the link that says example of active dialogue with what you're reading, and that's a PDF file. In case you haven't opened that, I'll just wait for a second. It's linked to this section of Blackboard. It's also linked to the online version of the syllabus because they're identical. Okay, so these are two pages that are scanned out of my notebook. Now, I'm not saying you need to think like me, but I just want to give you a sense of a dialogue with the author. What you've got here is an author called Latour, who's quite famous now, and his book that came out in 1993 called We Have Never Been Modern. It was a new book, so I could only have it from the library for a week or two before someone had recalled it, and I wanted to understand what he was saying. And if you look at the first sheet, you'll see that the first note I've made is page 142. It's near the end of the book. So I didn't start at the beginning in making my notes. I said to myself, you know, usually an author who's making an argument tells you at the end what his conclusion is, or her conclusion. So that's why I started at the end. And in this case, the way I took the notes was, you see a left-hand side and a right-hand side, because Latour was indicating that there's a contrast between two views about science, or there's a progression from one view to the other. So I wanted my notes to remind me of that and to lay it out. I also, further down on the left-hand side of that page, I've got quite a long quote. And so when I make a quote, I always put the page number, because it's the most frustrating thing to do, to have a quote and not have the page number, and then you want to cite it, and then you have to go and get that book out of the library again, and you have to find your way through and find that quote. It's so simple to write it down beforehand. And it's also important that if you're going to put something in quote marks, to tell yourself that it really was a quote, that you get it exactly right. You've probably heard of lots of authors who said, who've been accused of plagiarism, and they say, well, I didn't realize it was in my notes, I didn't realize I was quoting from someone else, I thought it was my words. Well, put it in quote marks to make clear whose words it is. You see other things I do on the right-hand side there in square brackets, I've got, they're my personal response, though that really is a dialogue, you know, I'm saying, whatever Latour is saying, I'm saying, okay, but, or I'm questioning some of his things. I'm probably someone who has a very more than usual average dialogue with authors. My notebooks over the years are filled with these kind of discussions. Sometimes the right-hand side takes over completely. Anyway, so I got a sense of things at the by the end of the book, and then I went back to the beginning, and I was able to see the way he set up the argument. And again, it seems like there's everything's in not just a contrast like there was at the end, but there are three categories. And so I made it clear to myself in the notes what fitted under each category. And then it turned out he repeatedly used that three-part schema during the book. You'll also see the little symbol that looks a bit like a spring, a squiggle. And that's my symbol for there's some kind of tension between those two ideas. Tension to me is not a contradiction or the person's making a mistake. It's that the two ideas are hard to separate, and yet they're hard to collapse into one idea. So there's something there to keep thinking about. One of the main things I try to do in my notes is that if I were coming back in 3 years or 20 years, I'd be able to quickly get back into my own thinking. And you might say 20 years. Well, a couple of times in the last 20 years, the issues come up of someone's talk, and I remember that I didn't completely agree with the person's talk. So I also write notes on people's lectures and seminars and so on. I couldn't even remember the person's name, even. But by remembering roughly which year it was, I would go to my notebook, and in the back of my notebook, I can't show you this in an audio recording, but in the back of my notebook, I have the table of contents. So I would scan through the ones in 1983, and there would be Terry Deacon's lecture on brains of apes and relationship to brains of humans. And then I would open up and I'd say, oh, so that's what I was thinking. That's what you're saying, and that's what I was thinking. Yeah, that's right. Because usually, if you make those kind of responses to someone, it has gone into your thinking cap and percolated along and become part of your later thinking. In fact, it's kind of my theory that if you honor ideas you have or someone has by writing them down, they're more likely to become ideas that are available to you to work with. If you just use a highlighter on text, it's kind of doesn't stick. It's not there for you. So that's why I call it active digestion. Digestion is a biological process. It's not just eating food. It's the food being transferred through your intestinal walls into the and becoming part of the cells of your body. So digestion is an active dialogue, but it's also an active dialogue so ideas become part of your own thinking that you can use. And you see down the bottom there were some definitions that were important, so I made sure I got them down. Now, if I went back to these notes now, I would probably say, I want to get out the book again, I want to have another look and so on. But in the course of just a semester working on your projects, you'll probably remember what you're thinking enough, be able to use it. Your notes, hopefully use your notes, not have to go back to the text. But it may be that as your project develops and your writing develops, you end up saying, look, this is more important than I thought, in which case you've got to go back and pull out the article or open it up on your computer if you've downloaded it as a PDF, or borrow the book again if you've taken it back. When you borrow books by interlibrary loan, you often have to take them back more quickly than you'd like. But these days, when you use interlibrary loan to get articles from journals, you can download them onto your computer and then you've got them forever. I recommend making use of that resource. You're paying fees to UMass, and there's an enormous range of journals that you have access to out there in the world. Anyway, that's really talking about session two. We've done that. Okay, so each of you may have different ways that you want to have a dialogue, different ways of note-taking. You know, some people have double-entry note-taking, where they're writing down things from the article on the left-hand side and they're writing down their comments on the right-hand side. Or they rule a line in the middle of the page and they use the left and the right-hand side. Other people insist on using highlighters or printing out material and writing in the margins. I sometimes write not in the margins of books, but I sometimes write in the margins of articles I've printed out. But I often find that when I go back, I don't really remember my thinking as well. So the thinking that I do in notebooks is better developed, and it has a bit more space to, you write a few more words, and then you can really understand what you're thinking. So don't simply say, oh, I've got my own habits and they're hard to change. In this this is a course where you get a chance to try something out. And even if after you've tried it out and you abandon it, you at least understand the way you do things better. Maybe you tweak what you do a little bit. You don't simply do it because that's the way you've done it. That's enough preaching. Okay. So, annotating references, that's on the syllabus as well. One of the assignments in Phase B is to produce an annotated bibliography. That isn't just a chore that the professor wants you to do. It's a way of saying every reference you choose, you need to have some kind of dialogue with, so that you can check out whether that reference is really helping you in your project. You know, sometimes it's very easy to make a list of references that look interesting, but it's not until you've had some sort of dialogue with it and been able to write in words how it relates to your project. That's what the annotation means. The annotation isn't just telling the professor, you know, what's in this article. The professor doesn't want to know that. The professor wants to know that you've read it and connected it to your work, or if it's not connected to your work, or if your work's changed so it's no longer connected, leaving it out. Now, sometimes by the time you do the annotated bibliography, you won't have read all the articles that you've put down, but it's even worth annotating why you thought it was interesting. The very fact of annotating it, very act of annotating it, makes you more likely to think about, you know, what should I read first, or what am I really doing now? Because at this point in the semester, you know, the third week, you've probably got multiple directions you could follow, multiple interests. It's probably a bit confusing. The project's got bigger than you thought. So you need this dialogue to help you keep thinking about it. It's not going to just all fit together just by sitting there and waiting. That's enough about note-taking. Later on, when you do the threaded discussion, I hope you get to share some of the approaches you use, not just try to imitate the approach that I use. Okay, I'm going to close this PDF. The next part of this session on organizing and processing research materials is the way you set up your computer. In the preparation, there were two files. One was research and study competencies, which we lay out for CCT students and try to encourage them to develop over the course of their studies in the program. Most of the online students are only in this course. They're not necessarily in the CCT program. So that's a long list, that research and study competencies. And again, I would say just mark 4 or 5 that you want to follow up on and improve on. And if you find yourself marking 10, try to work out which you think are most important to you. But then set out to do them. Don't just leave them sitting there so that at the end of the semester you say, well, I didn't get to that. The other file, Virtual Office, gives you a sense of how I've developed my organization, you know, over the years. Well, I have to tell you that in the late part of the 90s, teaching courses, it was hard to get every student to use email. Some students said, look, I don't use email. Well, that seems the distant past now. But there's a lot of other things that people say they don't use. Oh, I don't know how to use wikis. Well, it's pretty new to me too. But here in this file virtual office, it gives you a sense of the way I am able to organize my work so that I can do it as efficiently as possible and then be able to work in more than one place, you know, at home, on a laptop, and at school. I never have the situation where I'm saying, oh, I don't have that file. Oh, I'm not sure which is the most up-to-date version. Oh, damn, I've made two versions of the same file and edited them both, and now I've got to combine them back together again. All those, or the worst of all, my computer crashed. You know, computers crash, and it takes some time to take it and get the hard drive reestablished. But you should never lose more than a few hours of work. You need a backup system. And so my backup system is described under synchronized files. Using a Macintosh, I have this software I've used for more than 10 years called Synchronize. It's not very expensive. And I don't show it on, I should do a screenshot and add it to this, the virtual office webpage. But I have everything in folders, inside folders, and only at the bottom level do I have the actual files. So I don't have a desktop on my computer full of files. You know, some people's desktops are cluttered with all sorts of files and then they've got to go and search for them. You might say these days it's quite easy to search for files. They have all these great searching programs on computers. You can search back for words inside files that are 20 years old and so on. Yep, you can. But having things in folders and folders means that you can do this synchronizing really easily. You use the same structure of folders and folders within folders, or in Windows they call it directories, directories within directories, on all your computers. That means you have to set up what that organization is. My organization is, let me open it on my computer, and it won't be yours. I have something for correspondence and workplace items, my courses, my bibliography files, my email files, papers I'm writing. And of course, within the papers folder, there's a folder for each paper I'm writing, or each group of papers. Proposals, that's grants and so on, actual research I'm doing, and then website files. Inside the website files, there is a folder now for wiki, work on wikis. So these things have developed over the years, but I've kept that same structure so I can keep backing up and synchronizing and not having to worry, you know, where would that file be? Because it's in the same folder within folder within folder. What else is in this organizing a computer? Well, the basic principle behind all this, the details aren't that important. You know, some of you won't end up having email groups because you're not a teacher. But the principle is, the first principle is the one on the research organization sheet, which is that you don't have enough time in your busy life to have trouble finding something, or recovering from a computer crash, or saying you had this idea, but what was it again? You just respect yourself enough that you write down those ideas in a workbook. Or if you're totally wedded to the computer, you write it in a workbook file on your computer. You don't have time to be disorganized. You know, some people say, I don't have time to organize my life. Well, you don't have time to be disorganized. If you find yourself disorganized, you're really disrespecting your own time. And that's the analogy I use about washing dishes in the morning before you go to work, so that when you come home, you've done the morning Peter has done the evening Peter a favor, so that when the evening Peter comes home tired, he doesn't have to face a sink full of dirty dishes. Anyway, we could have a whole discussion if this was actually a face-to-face dialogue about why we sometimes choose to leave dirty dishes in the sink and so on, but or we do things different ways. But it's a you can understand, even if you leave dirty dishes in the sink, how nice it is to come home and they're already done. So that's the same thing about organizing your computer, that when you sit down to work on your paper or your thinking, you don't have to spend a lot of time tidying up, finding those files, getting upset because you've lost something that you were thinking about, and so on. Although this is not about computers, you've also seen, heard in what I've been saying, that I place a lot of importance on notebooks, workbooks. I don't really think of those as a journal in the sense of dear diary. I mean, it's fine to do some free writing in your workbook, but I think of it as a place where you, you know, that you always have with you. If you have a chance meeting with someone and they talk and you start talking about your project and they make a suggestion, you can write it down there. You're not writing on a post-it that you have to transfer later or you might lose, or on the back of an envelope. And of course, as I said before, by writing notes, you're kind of honoring your thinking, and so it's more likely to become part of yourself that you can you have access to. Anyway, if you have an interest in any of these other aspects of organizing your computer, which are on this page called Virtual Office, but you don't completely understand them, then please email me, or email Jeremy, he'll understand them, or email whichever instructor it is by the time you do this course. Okay, the last aspect of this session is to begin the threaded discussion where you're sharing ideas that you have about organizing and processing research materials. So to do that well, you need to use that research organization sheet, which is also linked to session 3. Fill in what you do yourself, or the things you try to avoid doing because you think they're inefficient. What you do with regard to organizing materials on paper, and what you do with regard to organizing computer files and records. And then add some things you've heard in these audio recordings, if any of them struck you as worth following. Add things that from reading these linked sheets, like the research and study competencies in the Virtual Office. And then go into the threaded discussion and make your contributions and borrow from other people's contributions. And if you want more explanation, let the person know by using the reply mode. So the threaded discussion I'm talking about is on Blackboard, just not on the Google Groups. Look forward to seeing or hearing, or the instructors do, when they talk with you in office hours conferences about the way you've set up your organization. And I hope it helps you do the research and reading and eventually writing that you want in order to make your project satisfying to you. Thanks.